Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of the 343 podcast, where we work tirelessly to elevate the level of discourse and practitionership here in American soccer. Today is masterclass lesson number four, or session number four, where we focus on the ball and the wall. And as I've always said, the wall is the best teacher, and don't take it from me, but take it from a laundry list of historical and current professional soccer players that swear by it. If you take the time and work by yourself with a wall, in a very particular manner, of course, then you are going to drastically increase your capacity as a soccer player, particularly technique. So Benny Rogers again joins me, and that is the central focus or the central theme of the episode. Of course, we meander in and out and take little tangents here and there, talking about other things that are soccer related, but always bringing it back to that masterclass session or lesson number four in our series. Our previous three podcast episodes were masterclass lesson number one, number two, and number three. They all tackle different topics. You might want to have a listen at those as well. But yeah, this continues our series of going lesson by lesson in the masterclass. It's going to take us a while. I'm not going to lie to you guys, because we have, I'd estimate, 60, 70 lessons worth of stuff in the masterclass. And for those of you who are interested, you could go to 343masterclass.com. That is where you can find all of the stuff. If you just sign up right away, the registration links are live and available for you today. It is primarily focused towards parents of soccer players here in the United States. So folks, if you're not quite sure what your kid should be working on, and you're not quite sure how to guide or mentor your kid yourself, whether it be from a technical, tactical, physical, mental perspective, or even off the field sort of stuff, such as should I be playing at this club or should I be leaving? And the ecosystem as a whole, or being able to talk to your kid about what he's doing right, what he's doing wrong. Of course, you might have a daughter, so I don't mean to just say the male pronouns here, of course. But yeah, parents, you can sign up right away. You don't have to wait until all these audio lessons come out for you over the course of the next year. You can just sign up right away, get everything. Of course, there's a lot more than audio there. There's written copy, there's images, there's video, there's extensive anecdotes, we fill in all the blanks for you. And coaches, if you want to join, of course, you're welcome to do so, but we have a separate specific product for coaches. For you guys, it's at 343coaching.com. There are free and premium programs for you there. Go ahead, hop on board. Thousands of coaches have gone through the program. And they all, well, I'm not going to say all of them, because some, you know how it is. Some people sign up to online courses and they actually never even go through it for some reason. It's very strange. Or they'll sign up for an online course and not take it seriously. They'll just peruse through it. But of those who have taken it seriously and executed the methodology with their teams, they swear by it. I can just go down a laundry list of testimonials, hundreds of testimonials that we've received. There's some, of course, that you can read on the landing page itself, but I'll leave that for another day. And if you're coaching 7v7, don't forget that we have 7v7coaching.com for you. So, okay, ads aside, here we go. Listen in to my discussion with Benjamin Rogers. This is masterclass lesson number four on using the wall. Enjoy.
How are you? How's your day?
Pretty busy. And now after we have our little chat, I'm going to go to like a pre-Thanksgiving sort of thing with the girl and her family.
There you go.
You?
Yeah, I've been good. Just busy. I was working all day. Mike and I, we put together a futsal event today, and we had maybe about 24 teams come out to Troy. We had 6 courts running, and we just, let the coaches either run a little session or they could also just play with their teams. So it was good.
Nice. Pay to play?
Free today.
Oh, okay. Very cool, man.
Yes,
very
sir. Cool. Yes, sir. We always try and do 3 events when we can. It's a good way to, recruit the next generation of Troy kids.
That makes sense, man. I think it would be a good tool for a bunch of clubs to use. But then again, do they really have to do that? Because in many cases, certain clubs are their only game in town anyway. They don't have to go above and beyond. The players just come to them no matter what.
For sure. And you know what? Sometimes we do need to ask for money because, as you mentioned before in previous podcasts, you know, nothing is free. Everything costs money. But when we can, you know, we want the kids to be able to play. So,
no question, man. I follow a whole bunch of people on X for many, many, many years. And there are some folks who are quite prolific in pointing out the pay-to-play stuff, you know, and demonizing it in many ways. And it's quite unfortunate, man, because the reality is, I'm going to repeat it here, we should put this in the podcast too, is nobody is getting rich off of this, okay? No youth soccer club is getting rich. Point to me one person who is a multimillionaire because they were incorporating pay to play. Yeah, there are millionaires for sure who run and operate clubs, but they didn't make their money from club fees. It's just not true, man. I don't know. Do you have any insight as to who are the best paid folks in youth soccer? Like from my time, it's kind of like, oh, okay, if you're making six figures, you're definitely at the very high end of the marketplace already, and not like huge six figures. No, just breaking 100K, you know, maybe 100, 120, 150 is like, wow, that's out of control. Amazing. And that's like, you are a serious DOC, technical director sort of character of a very sizable club. And 150K or 100 or 120 here in Southern California, you're basically poor. You ain't rich.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to name drop anybody, but the other thing also that I hear from parents is like, oh, the DLC or the owners of the club, like it's just a money grab. They're trying to get all this money. And like you just said, yeah, they're probably bringing in 100 grand, 150 grand, but that's fucking nothing. And at the end of the day, it's a 24/7 full-time job. You never stop. You're constantly getting emails, phone calls, setting up tournaments, league schedule. You know, it's more than a 9-to-5. I'm sure if many club owners out there today, they could go and get a 9-to-5 and make 200 grand, but no, they choose to do it because, you know, they love the game and they want kids to be able to play. You know, I'm sure there's incentive for money somewhere, but it's not like they're bringing home $1 million.
No chance. And it's a lot of hard work, like you said, and most people are not making that at all, not even remotely close. Most folks are making $1,000 a team or $2,000 a team or $1,500 a team or something like that. Most coaches who are quote unquote full-time, you are poor, my man. You are fucking poor. So goddamn, it's just something that needs to be abolished from our narrative here in American soccer. And by the way, MLS and the people who are really making the fucking money, those people up there, they're the ones who are, oh, cool, let them keep thinking it's pay to play, that those are the folks who are crooked. No, man, it's a huge diversion.
Yeah. And I will say, you know, on the totem pole, coaches are at the bottom. You know, that's coaches and the DLC, then directors and owners of the club. But I think the real heroes are the volunteer coaches. I don't know how they do it, man.
Yeah, well, I think the preponderance of them are able to do it because their kid is on the team or they're doing it for their kid one way or another. And so then it makes sense because, you know, if I had a kid who was playing club soccer, yeah, I'll go ahead and volunteer if I'm their coach. You don't have to pay me 100%. So are they heroes? I mean, I don't know if I go as far as to say they're heroes, you know, because they have an incentive to do it, namely their kid. But sure, it's really cool if the more volunteers that we have. Same thing with like the board of directors of many nonprofit clubs. They're volunteering, the proponents. But again, it's because they have a kid in the club and they're in a power position now in the club. And they can use that power of being on the board to benefit their kid. That's why they do it. They're not there as angels and saints to like, oh, I really care about all of the children and your child, my ass. You know, if it comes down to it, it's your child and my child. Guess who they're going to pick? They pick their children. That's why they're there. Sorry if I'm offending folks, but that's why you're listening to the 343 podcast. Unvarnished fucking truth.
But also maybe they, not just to be able to coach their kid, but they also want to have some power, meaning like in playing time, or I want my son or daughter to be playing in this formation with these players. So there's also that aspect. So maybe they're not heroes after all. Okay.
Look, we're all human. We all like power to a certain degree. Let's be real. And they're also in a position of quote unquote power whereby in their day jobs or whatever it is that they do for a living, maybe they are, I don't know, just pawns, scrubs, insignificant figures who can be fired and the world keep going. Doesn't matter. The company doesn't care about them, all that stuff. But now, ooh, I am a board member. I'm the treasurer of the youth soccer club, you know, and I get to do things. People get their rocks off on that as well. Again, I'm going to repeat it. I'm going to repeat it because I think the whistle blew in your background that, hey, folks, you're tuning into the 343 podcast. This is how we roll. Unvarnished fucking truth. You either want to listen to it or you just want to stick your head in the sand and you know, continue in your little echo chamber, your little bubble chamber.
I like it, Gary. And yeah, I mean, big shout out to everybody that tunes in every week because there's some hard truths that are said that almost nobody else says out there. So respect to anybody that's listening.
No, because usually it's bad for business to tell the truth, Ben. But I don't care, like I told you a million times. And in this day and age, I think the pendulum is swinging towards truth tellers again.
All right, Gary, let's get into it. So as everybody knows, we've been plugging away through the 343 Player Development Masterclass. Today's lesson that we wanted to talk about is developing soccer technique, the best tool. Right. So I think tonight we can go into, you know, what is the best way to develop good football technique. We'll talk a lot about the wall for sure. Maybe we can start with a quote from the actual lesson itself. And this is a quote from Claudio Reyna from his book, More Than Goals, The Journey from Backyard Games to World Cup Competition. So Claudio says, I spent a lot of time hitting the ball against the side of the house when I was growing up. If my mother complained about the noise, I'd hop down the retaining wall at the end of our property to the office building parking lot. I'd use that wall, hitting the ball with both feet, seeing how long I could return the wall's passes without losing control. I found out later that so many pros spent lots of their childhood doing that. So I think just in his last phrase right there, I'm sure thousands of pros can attest to this. You know, they spent their childhood on the wall every single day. And a lot of my players, Gary, as a coach, a lot of my players ask me, coach, what's the best way that I can, you know, get more playing time or how can I get better? And my answer every single time is get on the wall, right? In the game, is your first touch letting you down? Okay, get on the wall. Is your passing ability, is it not the best on the team? No problem. Get on the wall, right? And I think the wall is such a powerful tool, but I think where everybody misuses it is that they'll go on the wall once or twice. And they're like, coach, I went on the wall, but once or twice is not going to do anything. I mean, you have to be out there every single day working on your technique, perfecting your technique, not just you go for the wall and randomly kick the ball for 15 minutes, right? You want to be out there with a purpose. So maybe you can give me your experience with the wall. I mean, I'm sure as a player, you were on the wall yourself. You know, I've seen your first touch, Gary. It's pretty clean.
It used to be, Ben. It used to be.
Get on the wall.
Yeah. Look, I don't remember when it was. In my childhood house, my parents, we lived across the street from a public park. And at that public park, there was this building where one side of the building was, there was no windows, there was nothing. It's just like pure brick or cinder blocks. And so, yeah, after like 3, 4, 5 p.m. in the evening, whoever worked in that building, they were all gone. They all went home. There was nothing there. So I think I was probably like 13, 14, 15. It was already late in my quote unquote development. It was probably like I was 15 years old, actually. I was probably in high school. Yeah, I would go there, I'd say 4, 5, 6 days a week, like almost every single afternoon, late evening, and just, yeah, knock the ball against the wall. And I attribute my most improvement as a player to that. And each session, I don't know, would probably be maybe an hour and 30 minutes long. I mean, seriously, that's how long I'd be doing it. And over the course of time, you know, I had to invent my own sort of quote unquote drills on the wall too, because it's one thing to just be randomly kicking it. And it's an entirely different thing to actually implement some sort of structure and objectives. Objectives could be hitting a particular section of the wall consistently. And that could be from long range, medium range, short range. And it could be a one-time thing like a free kick sort of exercise, or it could be a repetitive, you know, back and forth constantly, or it could be a hit the wall, then stop it and then hit the wall again sort of thing. Like you can invent all kinds of things. And to kind of mention the masterclass again, we provide a lot of those sorts of structured activities to isolate and work on particular pieces of one's game with it. One of the most fun that I would have with it is I would kick the shit out of the ball and have it come back to me super hard, you know, so it was like close range sort of thing. And I think that helped me a lot in being able to receive canons from folks or just be able to isolate, you know, that first touch, work on that first touch is hugely important. So anyway, long story short, I was probably 14 years old when I first started doing this. I probably did it consistently for like 2 years or something. And that is what helped me the most out of everything, out of coaching, out of watching games, you name it. That is actually what developed my technique above and beyond everything else.
Would you and Brian train together, or was it more of just like a solo thing?
Totally solo, man. Totally solo. And I attribute a lot of, it's kind of cool, man. When I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I like being alone, Benny, and alone with your thoughts, alone with your frustrations, you know, and because when there's somebody else there, in my opinion, it's a distraction from focus, if that makes sense.
And just so everybody, maybe they've never seen a video of somebody training on the wall. And I don't want people to get the wrong idea. Like, we're talking about hard concrete wall. Like, for example, like one of my players had told me, like, coach, I was on the wall today. And he showed me a picture of where he was training. And it's like a little like wooden fence. So meaning like when he'd hit the fence, the ball wouldn't even roll back to him. He'd have to go and get it, right? So you want a hard, sturdy wall that when you give the wall a pass, you know if you gave it a good pass, because if it's rolling back to you on the ground hard, okay, you know that you had a good pass, right? If it's bouncing back, you know that your technique was off. So I just wanted to clear that up just so people know, right? Maybe people have no idea.
Yeah, totally, man. And there's so many exercises you can create. One of my free kick exercises was I wanted to hit, you know, the right, as close to the right edge of the wall as I possibly could, you know, from 18 yards out, 22 yards out, whatever the heck it was. And so it really forced me to concentrate, because if I miss, I have to go fetch the ball 50 yards away, you know, and that kind of sucks. You really don't want to miss. And you also don't want to cheat yourself and say, oh, I totally want to hit it 2 meters within the edge. You really, really, it really focuses you to do an activity like that. And by the way, you can work on your fitness as well, because I remember like it was yesterday, Benny, in that particular exercise, if I were to miss, not only did I have to go fetch the ball, which ended up being 50 yards away or something, I had to sprint to go and get the ball and sprint all the way back. So I forced myself from a mentality perspective to do that if I missed.
Yeah, that makes sense. I have a feeling at the end of those sessions, your shirt is drenched, you're exhausted, right? That's how you know you got a good session in.
Totally, man. And look, people are listening to me. Oh, Gary training on the wall. Who the fuck is Gary? Yeah, I never became a professional soccer player. I'm just giving you a little anecdote of how much I believe it helped me out at whatever level I happen to be at and gotten to. And don't take it from me. Take it from all the pros, like you opened up saying. You know, there's a number of very famous videos from ex-pros doing it. Diego Forlan is one of them. And that's one that we obviously have in the masterclass showing you what he was doing. And then there's Berbatov, you know, former Manchester United player also, who had an exquisite first touch. One of the best first touches in all of world football, kind of like of all time, frankly speaking, also doing the hitting the ball against the wall. Maybe you can look those up, Benny, and inject a few little clips for folks.
Right. Another player that you mentioned is Dennis Bergkamp, Ajax player, super phenom. And you could see it in his game, right? The way that he would spray balls, the way that he'd set up to assist. And he mentions that when he was a youth player at Ajax, they had little 3-foot walls and he would be on the wall after trainings for hours, you know, so many testimonials in it. Listen, if these are the best players in the world, then why are we doing anything different, you know?
There's another famous story of, I think the coach of Boca Juniors at the time was Carlos Bianchi. Don't quote me on that. We'll have to research it. Many years ago, his team kind of wasn't performing well or didn't do well on a weekend or something. And the entirety of the next handful of sessions was he lined everybody up against the wall there in the training facility. And the entire session, every single session for God knows how long, they were just kicking the ball against the wall. And he had a tirade, you know, after all these performances. You guys can't have a terrible first touch. You have shocking technique. Everything's a disaster around here. Go kick the ball against the wall.
And I'm sure they improved, no?
No, I have no idea. I don't remember, man. All I remember is that, because that's kind of very rare, Benny. Very unique sort of story. You know, it doesn't happen every day.
Yeah. Well, Gary, last thing I'll mention about the wall, and we can talk about other stuff, but the value of training on a wall. I mean, think about how much money parents are spending to go and find a private trainer when literally if you have access to the course or if you just have an idea of some types of repetitions you want to get, meaning like one or two touch, inside of the foot, you know, inside of the foot volleys, and it's for free. You go to your local park, you find the wall, and you're going to get so much more value just by training on the wall than you would with any personal trainer.
No question. You can also inject a notion of technical debt here. You're getting so many more repetitions and catching up to whoever's in front of you, or increasing the gap between whoever is chasing you on the depth chart there on your local team.
Right. Well, what role does repetition play in mastering technique, Gary, in your opinion?
I'm not a neurobiologist, okay, or a neuroscientist, but it seems that repetition really has a profound effect on wiring your neurons so that you have that muscle memory to be able to execute whatever it is that you are applying repetitions to that much quicker, that much better, and without giving it much thought. You know, one of the cool things that I also remember growing up is when my technique wasn't that good, I'd have to focus in a game to make sure, oh, here comes the ball. I'm focusing to make sure that my first touch is good. Yeah, it was a conscious effort. And then after several years of probably doing it on the wall, I found that I wasn't doing that anymore. I wasn't actually saying, oh, shit, somebody just passed me the ball, you know, focus and get a good first touch the way I want it. No, I would just do it automatically. And the best players that, yeah, not just at the pro level, but the best youth players also have a lot of that involved. We talked about Efrain Alvarez in our last podcast. Efrain Alvarez isn't sitting there thinking about, oh, the goalkeeper just punted the ball. I have to bring it out of the air in a good way. He's not thinking, oh my gosh, here it comes. Okay, let me put my leg like this or my foot like that. You know, no, he just does it. And if you can get to that point, then you're good. But that takes repetition, hundreds and thousands and thousands and thousands of repetition. And if you're only going to training as a youth player twice a week, 1.5 hours every time that you're there, so that's 3 hours total per week that you're putting in. And of those 3 hours, probably only 30 or 40 minutes you're actually doing exercises in your team training environment. And out of those 30 or 40 minutes, it's probably not high repetition situation either. Bro, you are not getting your repetition. You're never going to get good enough.
Yeah, that's funny that you mentioned that, Greg, because I had a similar experience with that. And like, I can remember vividly in high school, like my first varsity game, so nervous, right? And I remember the first time a ball got pinged to me in the air, what was running through my mind? Like, fuck, don't fuck up. Have, you know, like focus, need to have a good, clean first touch. But okay, so if I wasn't thinking of that, and if I was confident because I had spent more time on the wall, and what did we talk about last week, right? Having awareness. So while the ball's in the air, instead of thinking like, have a good first touch, focus, I could be scanning, be looking, right? That way it just, boom, it comes to me clean and I already know my decision, right? But so having better technique allows you to have more awareness on the field.
Benny, we have a good short video that maybe you can inject here as well. And keep what I'm saying now. Of, you remember Carlos Anguiano from Brian's famous team, that specifically highlights a number of occasions in the same game, you know, where he is going to receive a pass, somebody's passing it to him, and instead of focusing on the ball while the ball is in transport to him, he's looking over his shoulder, you know, so he's like literally saying, doing what you just said, scanning the field while the ball is on his way to him, you know, so he's not focusing on the ball at all. He's looking for his next move. Then the ball gets to him, and of course, he receives super clean and then executes his next action.
Yeah, I'll have to look for that video. Sick video.
But if you suck at your technique, Benny, if you don't have these repetitions, you bet your ass that you are not concentrating on scanning. You're like, oh shit, here comes the ball. I'm focused on the ball.
I'm pretty positive, Gary, that my first touch in the varsity game was shocking.
Shocking.
Well, Gary, let's, like I always like to do, let's take a mic or so into the simple phrase, developing soccer technique. What does soccer technique mean to you?
Well, first and foremost, they are actions on the ball. Okay, so you're going to be making contact with the ball. It could be receiving a pass. It could be giving a pass. It could be taking a shot. It could be any contact with the ball. You need technique. And so good technique means that you take full advantage of your space and full advantage of whatever time that you have. So if you have exceptional technique, you're capable of retaining possession and executing your desired next action, even if you don't have much space and you don't have much time. That's basically what it means. And it applies to off the cuff here, I think it applies to pretty much every single circumstance where you have contact with the ball, is if you have great technique, you can execute what I just said. If you have poor technique, then you need more space and or more time to control and then execute your next desired action. That's all it is, man.
Something that I think also gets ignored, especially in younger players, or maybe they don't even tend to think about, is, you know, the development of your weak foot. When you look at the pros, most of them, you look at them and you wouldn't even be able to tell if they're left or right foot. So something that I always tell, especially my younger players, is the sooner that you could start working on your weak foot, the better it's going to be for you. Because listen, for me, I'm 28 years old. If I wanted to go and work on my left foot, it's going to take me way longer than it would if I was starting at 7, 8, or 9 years old. So what do you think of the importance of developing that weak foot? And obviously, right, the wall is a great place to do that.
Yeah, so there's exceptions to all the rules. I think that is the general rule, is to work on your weak foot so that it's not a handicap for you. Because if space and time are really restricted to you, you don't have much space or much time, then you may not have the option of doing everything with your best foot. You're going to have to use your weak foot. And if your weak foot sucks ass, well, guess what? You're going to lose the ball. So that's the general rule. Put the exceptions aside, because if you look at like Messi, or you look at like Arjen Robben, or you look at, you know, all these notorious players who basically were single footed and couldn't do all that much, and doing air quotes with all that much with your weak foot, those are the exceptions to the rule. Okay. Maybe we can also find another clip. There's an infamous, I think I saved it, I'll send it to you. There's an infamous coach in Spain, formerly in Spain. Shoot, what was he the coach of? I think it was Rayo Vallecano, or, you know, one of the mid to lower tier Spanish first division clubs. And he told a story of how he was preparing, or he was asked how he was preparing the game against Barcelona when Messi was there. And the game plan all centered around Messi. And he trained the entire week, all his players, and the full focus was, hey, just make him go to the right, no matter what. If you give him acres of space, no problem. Just don't let him cut into his left. Don't let him do anything to his left. Kill off his left side, basically. And the interview, we asked him, well, how'd that work out? And then he laughs. He's like, the motherfucker scored 2 goals with his right. Like, and then he's like, oh, like at that point, you just have to give up. But that's Messi.
Right.
But it's crazy, because he could be considered like a single footed guy. And here's a full story where they just cut off all his options with his left, and the guy scored 2 goals with his right foot. He almost never scores with his right foot, but he was forced to. So he did it.
How much of that do you think, like, do you think Messi, as a young child, had in mind, like, all right, let me work on my right foot today? Or do you think he's just that naturally, he's an alien, he's that gifted?
No, it's a question for him, obviously. But I think all footballers who love the game, who truly love it, they just work on it. They're like, oh, I suck at this. And they're like, I don't want to suck at this. So they work on getting good at this.
Yeah. How was your weak foot, Gary? I'd say at your peak. Like when
I would
when
say,
you're in your best form, how was
I
it?
Would say at my peak, I think my weak foot was better than other people's weak foot on average, if I can say that. You know, like everybody sucks with their weak foot, basically. So that's kind of like the normal thing. I think I was better with my weak foot than the average person was with their weak foot. Sincerely, like I can fucking shoot a cañón from 18 yards, you know, and kind of like pick a spot.
Oh, shit. Well, next time we're on the field, I want to see it, Gary.
Dude, bro, I have not kicked a ball ever since that one dude just crushed my knee. That was probably like 2 years ago, Benny, or maybe more. Yeah, more than 2 years ago.
No, it's funny, because I remember I invited you to one of those sessions. Mm-hmm. And then I think, like, I don't know, like a month later, you happened to go without me. And then, like, at the next week, I asked him, like, hey, it was Gary. And they're like, oh, we fucked his knee up. Like, I don't think he's coming back.
Yeah, bro, but it was bad. I'm sure I need surgery. I'm sure I needed surgery. Something's messed up. I'm sure I tore a meniscus or something like that, but I never went. Like I told you last time, I haven't been to the doctor in forever. I never even went in. I was out of commission. I got crutches on my own for like 2 weeks. No, I'm dead serious. And then eventually it kind of got good enough for me to walk, and eventually it got good enough for me to jog again. But yeah, at my age, I'm now psychologically effed, you know, because I start thinking, oh, if I actually go and try to play again, maybe it'll be really serious if something happens.
Yeah, that's funny. One more thing. Does it affect you when you're running, or you're good now?
Yeah, that's a good question, man, because I haven't forced myself in a long time to go really long distance or at high speeds. So the longest I've gone in the past 2 years is maybe a 6 mile run, but it was at a very, very light pace, like a 9 minute, 8.5 minute mile sort of thing. So it's nothing crazy. But even then, you know, after a while, like the knee would swell up a bit. And I don't know, you start getting a little bit worried, or going down the stairs of McCarthy Hall or up the stairs of McCarthy Hall or something like that. Sometimes I hear a little noise, like click, click, click. And I'm like, ooh, like something's not right down there.
I don't know if you don't believe in doctors or what, but maybe you want to get an MRI on that.
Yeah, sure. I'm not in pain. It's fully functional, with the exception of running a marathon, or with the exception of, you know, playing seriously. So if it's not, I mean, it has to be bad for me to go, I suppose is what I'm saying. Or I'm just a typical, here I'm going to be, what's it called, sexist or something, but, or maybe it's just like a typical man, like old school 90s attitude man. It's like, the doctor, fuck the doctor, unless I'm bleeding out of my penis, I'm not going to the doctor.
But you know what, Gary, I think that's something from your generation, especially with players, that you don't see now, because any opportunity that a young player has to like miss training or, you know, take a rest week, they're going to take it, right? Oh, my knee is tweaked, I'm going to go see the doctor. Or you saw back in the day, like somebody tore an MCL and this motherfucker is still trying to get back up and go in the second half. You know what I mean? So it's a different breed. I don't know if that exists so much these days.
Totally different breed. And don't take it from us. I mean, every generation, see this, I'm stuck with this mindset now that, am I just turning into my parents in the older generation? Because when I was growing up, like the quote unquote old people, right? People in their 40s or 50s or something, they turn into this get off my lawn sort of thing, and always look down at the up and coming generation saying, the next generation, bunch of lazy bums, bunch of pussies, you know, they can't tolerate anything, suck it up. When I grew up, I walked 3 miles in the snow to go to school every day, you know, that sort of shit. But I feel the same thing now, you know, so I'm kind of like turning into them, because I see the next generation. I'm being honest, you know, every generation has their pluses and civilization continues advancing. But I look at like the Gen Z or something, and you've seen those memes about kids who grew up in the 90s, kids who grew up in the early 2000s. And like Gen Z is like, oh, they stubbed their toe and it's a fucking crisis, you know, call the ambulance.
I'll just say this, millennials, the last great generation.
Oh, man. You know, I heard the other day that Gen X, which is what I am, played a significant role in swinging the election, though, because they had been fed up. Gen X kind of grew in a culture where you can say fucking that piece of fucking equipment is retarded. You can use the word retarded. Okay. We grew up in that generation, and all of a sudden we have all these rules. You can't even speak anymore. You have to be careful with every little thing. Oh my God, you're microaggression, la, 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 or whatever. And, you know, we were like latchkey kids, you know, now everybody has like helicopter parents. And when we grew up, Benny, I could beat up on Brian, my younger brother or something at home, because nobody was at home. My dad was at work. My mom was at work, and fucking it's World Wrestling Federation, you know, they're in the living room, you know, jumping off the top rope with a fucking flying elbow and stuff like that. And that just doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah. Now my brothers love to tell this story. There was one time, I think my parents were at work or something, in summer break, moved all the couches in the living room, fucking like put the mattress down, like stick out the UFC ring. One of these fools fucking kneed me in the head, and I was like unconscious for like 2 minutes. I woke up, I'm like, what the hell? Like, what happened?
But yeah, now it's like the kids will report you or something to the cops, or who the fuck knows what happens now. It's a fucking disaster.
Right. Meenesh, little rant we just went on, but let's talk about juggling really quick, Gary, because some people will say, you know, what's the point of juggling? Are you ever going to juggle in the game? You know, and to a point, you know, there's some credit there, but I think juggling is a good way for a player to get comfortable on the ball, meaning like you see the best players in the world, and for them, juggling just comes naturally. But you also see, I mean, like if you remember Dembele, when he first joined at Barca, and everybody was making fun of him because this fool couldn't juggle 5 times, or he was trying to do like an around the world, and just shocking, you know? So what role does juggling play in a player's development? Is it good? Is it bad? Should they spend time on it? What do you think?
Yeah, no, it's generally good, man. First and foremost, it's fun, okay? And players need to have fun. It's enjoyable. So that's number one. Number two, I think it does develop quite a bit of what I call foot sensitivity. So you develop sensitivities in a different part of your foot in making contact with the ball. So again, you're developing that sort of muscle memory associated with a good, clean first touch and making the ball go where you want it to go. And then the other component off the cuff here is it requires a degree of focus. So it helps you focus your mind. I'm not going to say I'm a big proponent, but I think, you know, during pregame warmups, if a player is juggling to a certain degree, you know, the rest of the world and distractions kind of melt away and it's just you focusing on football, you focusing on the ball. So that is a good way to mentally prepare for what's to come. And you obviously the repetitions that come from all of this spending. But yeah, you're not going to necessarily be juggling in a game. So then there's the contrast to everything that I just said, which is the famous Johan Cruyff quote, which is, hey, if you can juggle amazingly, great, go play in the circus. You know, that doesn't make you a footballer. So that's also true because you have all these amazing jugglers and you see the little juggling tricks that people do. And they're not even professional footballers who are doing these sorts of things. No, they're just like trick artists, right? They're doing backflips and doing, you know, juggling the ball on the sole of their foot and doing all kinds of flips and things like that. Okay, cool. But that doesn't mean you know how to play football at all.
To your point about, like, you know, it being fun, like today at the futsal event, we had, you know, a couple of freestylers and all of my kids are like, oh my gosh, can we go meet this fool? Can we get his autograph? Because this was doing sick ass skills, you know? But think about that. I mean, those people that focus just on that, they didn't wake up one morning and were just able to do it, right? These fools put in hours and hours and hours of training to be able to get to that point. Now, if they were on the wall spending all that time or trying to develop their technique, could they have gone and be pro? Maybe, you know? But they decided like, hey, you know what? I love this. This is the route that I want to go. And to me, it's really impressive to see those players because you know these tools have spent thousands of hours doing that to perfect what they're trying to do. You know, it doesn't just happen overnight like some people think.
Yeah. And Benny, I respect everybody out there. Everybody's trying to do the best that they can, whether it be players, parents, coaches. I respect everybody. So that disclaimer aside, I will tell you that I've gotten many emails over the years and still to this day, pretty regularly of parents sending me clips of their kids juggling, you know, and they kind of want advice and an assessment or help in certain respects about their kid, but they're sending me that clip to show me how good their kid is at soccer. And just unsolicited advice to parents out there. Don't do that, okay? Don't do that because it does not communicate what you think it communicates. If you're showing me that your kid is a great juggler, it means absolutely nothing to me, zero. And in fact, it kind of makes me shy away from digging deeper into the player or yourself as the parent because it's communicating that the parent probably doesn't know very much at all about football at that point. And again, with all due respect, you know, but it's just the reality. Seriously, Benny, I'm just getting all these videos where, hey, look at my kid juggle. He's amazing. He's really good. He just needs to find the proper team who will value his amazing skills, you know, because where he's at now doesn't value technique, right? And I'm looking, okay, the kid can juggle, fine, but who cares? That doesn't mean anything.
What do you think is the biggest mistake that players make when they're trying to develop their technique? Is it spending too much time on one thing? Is it, you know, working on only juggling? What's a big mistake probably that players are making? For me, Gary, like I mentioned when I first started, I'll give a player advice on what they need to work on. And it's been 2 or 3 days and they're like, oh, coach, you know, I did it. You know, what's next? I'm like, okay, you did it, but are you a master at it yet? Have you perfected the art of a daisy cutter pass?
Yeah, I don't know, Benny. It's a good question, but I think you're hinting at the potential answer, which is maybe they get bored too quickly with something and they want to move on to something else. It's kind of the same thing with all of us, if I'm being honest, across all domains, but I'll just stick to soccer. I think coaches make the same sort of mistake when they're trying to become a better coach and develop a team and develop players and develop themselves as a coach is they move on to something else way too quick. They're like, this 4v1 rondo. Yeah, I did it. You know, I did it all last week. Okay, what's next? Sort of thing. And I'm like, bro, tell me what's next after you've done it for 10 years. Okay. And saying, then maybe tell me what's next. Like, that is the biggest mistake. They don't do it long enough to the point where the magic of the activity starts revealing itself to you. Like, you literally cannot see the magic in the activity unless you've done it so much for so long that you start seeing things that you've never seen before. And that it sounds like hocus pocus what I'm talking about, but for anybody listening out there, if you worked at a particular job or have done a particular thing for a very, very, very long time, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. And there's a reason why the best teams in the world are doing rondos every single day. I mean, it's not just a 1 week thing or 1 month thing. No, they, even at the highest levels, they're still continuing to work on, you know, playing in tight spaces, right? Moving off the ball. They're still working on those things at the highest level.
Yeah, it's weird. I think there's this valley of despair usually that happens. What I mean by that is you do something new, it's exciting because it's new, and then you have a couple of successes with the new thing, and then you're excited again. And then if you keep doing it, it's going to take a long time before you graduate levels and get really good at it. And so the temptation there is, well, I know what happens, kind of like boredom sets in sometimes and frustration because you're not getting any better at it. And yeah, of course, you're not going to get any better at it because the next level is 1 year away for you or 3 years away for you. So you don't see yourself getting better and better and better. But the magic then comes 3 years later and all of a sudden you've leveled up and now it's fun all over again because you've become a master at the thing and now you don't want to stop doing it. Like, that's your baby. But there's that period, Benny. There's that 1 to 3 to 5 year period where it's a fucking grind and a slog and like, why the fuck am I doing this before you get to the other side?
Yeah. And that's another hard part is, well, this is something we talk about all the time. It's like educating the parents because maybe coaches feel pressure from the parents. It's like, coach, why are you running the same activity every single week? But if you haven't educated them as to why you're doing that, then yeah, you're going to feel that pressure. And naturally, the parents are going to be curious.
Yeah. And it's just, they don't know any better. And I don't blame them, Benny. If it's not your expertise, then you literally don't know any better and you rely on somebody else's expertise. You have to trust that other person's expertise. You have no choice. You have to trust it. And then even if they trust you, Ben, they're always going to have in the back of their mind, ooh, maybe the grass is greener elsewhere, or maybe this other quote unquote expert knows better, you know, because they have no way of judging you, Benny. That is the challenge with all of us when we're making decisions in fields that we are not experts in. We don't know how to judge. We're utterly incapable in most cases to judge who knows what they're doing and who doesn't know what they're doing. Because you yourself don't fucking know anything about the domain.
Yeah. And like you say, this is one of the reasons why you created the masterclass, right? To be able to help parents identify who is doing good work. And, you know, people may say, well, what gives you the credibility to do that? I mean, look at everything you have accomplished in the last 15 years and the trajectory of Grind's players, you know?
It's the best. It's best in the country, Benny. Outrageously unprecedented work. It's fucking impossible. What Brian did was fucking impossible. Just impossible. Impossible work. Impossible.
So obviously, Gary, a different position, right? It requires different techniques, you know? So maybe just really quick, we could go, I mean, we could keep it simple, right? Attackers, defenders, goalie even. But what are the qualities or what techniques? Let's say a player is a center forward or right or left winger. What technique should they be working on? Is it strictly shooting? Should they be working on, you know, touches out of the air? What do you think? If you're an attacking player, what technique should you be looking to, you know, work on the most?
Yeah, you said every position is different, Ben. We won't be able to go through the entire roster here. But, you know, if you're a winger, you have to be excellent at 1v1. Okay, so dribbling like crazy. So obviously this doesn't involve necessarily the wall, but just, it's very simple. You need no equipment. You need no personal trainer. You need nothing. Just grab a ball, go to a park where there's ample space or something and just dribble at speed, dribble at half pace, dribble with both feet, dribble, you know, at full speed and cut left, cut right, you know, go back and forth, do step overs, dribble, be able to beat people 1v1 off the dribble. That's number one. Obviously, you also need to know how to turn effectively. Like if your back is the goal, how do you turn and beat your guy? 1v1. So that's first and foremost. And then obviously finishing, because wingers should be able to have the capability to finish, and a winger should have the capability of serving great balls into the box of various flavors. You know, it could be an inside curler, an outside curler to somebody's head, you know, and you have to be able to pinpoint the person that you're serving it to. Don't blindly cross it. A lot of folks here kind of like blindly cross it. No, you have to develop the technique and the capability that when you're running at speed, you pick your head up, you pick your spot, your target in the box, and you serve it to that target with, like I said, either with some spin, because if it has some sort of outswinging spin with when the striker hits it with his head, there's an extra added momentum that really gets it on goal really fast and you can score easily. Or like a floating pass to the back post or something like that. You have to train that. And then obviously, you know, serving on the ground too. Pick your target, serve on the ground, either straight across the baseline or kind of, as they say in Spanish, to the punto de la muerte, which is the point of death, okay, which is kind of serving it backwards towards like that penalty spot and the oncoming like central midfielder or whatever finishes the play off that way. So I don't know. Those are principally the distinguishing features of a winger that they should work on. But of course, you need technique and all capabilities, because you have to be able to settle a pass with your first touch out of the air, you know, at your body or on the foot and of varying speeds. And you have to be able to pass the ball too, Benny. So I mean, you need a core of everything in every single position, but then there's the special features associated with each position.
Yeah. And another cool thing about the masterclass is we go through every single position, meaning wingers, nine, six, center backs, right? Give examples of each one and video clips as well. So for any parent who is, you know, has a kid that's a center back or a six, they're able to really go in with a microscope and look at what are the qualities that make a good six. And not here for me or from you, but from Brian. I mean, that insight right there is, you know, priceless.
And a whole library of video, you know, to actually watch and rewatch and rewatch again and rewatch again. And then the activities associated with that particular skill that they can train on either by themselves or have the parent go with the kid and train the kid themselves. Or if you're going to have a personal trainer, that's great. That's fine. But then you might have a little bit more of a discerning ability to see what personal trainer is better than another.
So Gary, for, I know we're, you know, we're talking to a lot of parents here, but for coaches, you know, most coaches these days are working tactical sessions, meaning it's a team session and they're not so much focusing on the technical ability, right? So how can a coach best help or influence his player to work on his technique? I think one thing that I got from Brian and he mentions a lot is giving his players homework, right? So like you talked about the winger, right? They need to be able to work on their services, or if it's an in swinging ball, or so you say, hey, this week, watch this specific player, look at how he serves the ball, and, you know, do that 1,000 times until you can't do it wrong, you know? So besides giving homework, what are some other ways that coaches can help their players?
It's hard, man. It's hard, especially if you don't have them for very long. As a youth coach, homework is the most important thing because there's a lot more hours in the day that you're going to be alone and not with the coach. Watching games obviously is very important, and tell the kids, because most kids maybe don't realize this, or parents either, just simply telling the kid, hey, go watch pro games, go watch these particular pro games, for example, and focus on this particular player, right? And say, hey, that's your position, man. So just watch him. Don't ball watch. Watch what this guy is doing. Every time he's on the screen, just look at him the whole fucking time. And in your peripheral vision, you kind of keep an eye on tracking where the ball happens to be, but your main focus is on the player that is in your position. So those are the main ingredients, Benny. I don't think you need to do much more than those two things, is the homework and watching games in a very specific manner to really have a huge leg up on your immediate competition in your club team and your local area and your region and even in the United States itself, because most players are not doing that.
100%, Gary. And, you know, I know when I publish to YouTube, or maybe even when you publish to Apple Podcasts, there's an option like it's just meant for kids. And I always hit no, right? But I think for parents, if you could share this message with your kid, I mean, think about how much your son or daughter is going to improve. I know all of them are on TikTok or Instagram for 30 minutes a day or an hour a day. If you can replace that with touches on the wall or watching soccer, the trajectory of their development is just going to increase so much. So, you know, hopefully they can pass that along to their kids. You know,
there seems to be a correlation in all our experience is the kids who actually watch games are the ones that end up being a little bit better than the ones who don't watch games. And you know, so many of these players, Benny, we can go and talk to these kids and they'll say, oh yeah, we watched America versus Necaxa yesterday. You know, what'd you think of the game, Gary? Like they'll be asking me, right? And they'll be rattling off the names of the players on the roster and the starting lineup, or the right winger really choked, you know, when he should have done X, Y, or Z, or did you see this pattern of play, you know, that we always train in training. So the ones who watch, first off, even gain a more of a love for the sport and they end up being the better player, Benny. It's just a reality. And you know what else is interesting is you can also hear like the parent, and in our case is usually the dad, kind of speaking through the kid, because you can kind of tell when the kid is being original in their thought about the analysis of the professional game that they just watched, or it was a thought that the dad kind of said during the match and the kid kind of says the same thing. You know what I mean? And what's right. You know, let me end this rant also with this. These are American kids. Okay, but like principally Mexican-American heritage or Latino-American heritage or European-American heritage, they can rattle off the rosters of a ton of club teams all around the world and national teams all around the world. And I'm talking about like 13, 14-year-olds or 10-year-olds even sometimes, certainly 16, 17. But they cannot rattle off the roster of the LA Galaxy. They cannot, you know, rattle off the roster of the U.S. men's national team and tell you what the hell happened, you know, with the game a couple weeks ago. No clue. And these are Americans here in the United States who love the game, have a passion for it, and are very good players in and of themselves. That's got to tell us something. You know, a subject for another day, but that's got to tell us something. They could give two shits about what's happening in American soccer.
Right. Yeah, Gary, even just lastly, even at the event today, that we were doing like giveaways, right? And the MC, he's like, all right, like, let me get all the kids over here, like a little soccer quiz today. And obviously today was Champions League, right? So Madrid, Liverpool, a bunch of teams playing. And he's like, all right, guys, somebody tell me one team that's playing in Champions League. And the kids are like, Inter Miami.
What?
Or you know what I mean? So there is like a difference. You can tell who watches the games, or some kids don't even know what Champions League is. Right. And I'm guessing on the field, they're pretty shocking as well.
Wow.
Pretty sad.
Okay. So that's not the demographic that I'm talking about though.
Right. Yeah. That's a complete opposite. Right. But like those players that you just mentioned, guarantee you, they would have listed off every single Champions League game that was being played today.
You know what else is crazy, Benny? Like Messi, big time thing, huge, amazing. Everybody loves him. A role model for so many of these kids and these players. But this demographic that I'm telling you right now could give a shit about tuning into Inter Miami matches, even if Messi's there. They just don't know. They don't tune in. That they tuned in when he first came over and it was like the first handful of games and it was a novelty. But now they don't even know when Inter Miami plays. If they're playing, they have the capability of tuning in. They don't even tune in. Like they don't even care. So that tells us something as well, Benny. It's broken here. Something is broken here. MLS is broken. US soccer is broken, where you have the most passionate, the most hardcore demographics in soccer, not giving two fucks about Messi playing for Inter Miami, not giving two shits about the league, not being able to name the roster of their franchise that happens to be in, you know, in their backyard, not knowing dick about the US men's national team. Yeah, they know something, but they're not tuning in. They're not really sitting there analyzing or being passionate about it or looking at any of them as role models. They could give two shits. You think this demographic that I'm talking about, Christian Pulisic is an amazing player, Benny. They're not sitting there wanting to be Christian Pulisic. They are not at all.
100%. They want to be Vinny. They want to be in Mbappe.
Rattle off whoever you want. You can name Mexicans. You can name any South American. It doesn't matter. But they are not having as role models the guys who play for the country that they were born in.
And you know why, Gary? Promotion relegation.
That's right, baby. That's right. So good, man. It's true, man. It's true. It's true. And folks rolling their eyes right now, that's cool. You will eventually come to understand it. It might take you another year, might take you five, it might take you 20 bloody years, but at some point, everybody comes to the realization at a certain level of depth that promotion relegation is behind all the ills in this country, 100,000,000%. And I'll give you an example with this demographic. If there was promotion and relegation in this country, this particular culture, this particular demographic that I just spent some time describing, they would have the capability of forming their own clubs in some division here, the third division, the fourth division, the second division, wherever the heck it happens to be, because they have money, Benny. They can get investors. The Mexican community has a lot of extremely wealthy people, whether they be in Mexico, whether they be here in the United States, anywhere around the world. They can easily purchase or start a club in any of the divisions here in the States, no problem. And they would build and develop it in their image, with their culture, with their type of playing style and their type of player profiles and what they appreciate in football, okay? And their ideas of what is good versus what is bad. And then they would have the opportunity to compete and see whose ideas are better and see whose capabilities of deploying this business of soccer is better. And I'm telling you, Ben, that the ones who are the hardcore soccer culture, over the course of time, they would just take over the sport. Pretty much every single first division club, if there was promotion relegation, would be from this demographic. And then finally, to circle the square here, the kids would be looking, and they would know the roster of whatever the LA club team is. They would know the roster of whatever team is in Miami now. They would tune in. They would go to the stadium. They would care about the games more so than tuning into some foreign league or some foreign club, because this would be their people.
1,000%, Gary. Good way to end it. I like how we end every week with promotion relegation, how it ties into everything. Because
I think we should. I think that's a brilliant idea, Ben. I'm looking forward to the day where you can stump me and whatever topic we've been discussing is not linked to promotion relegation. I'm looking forward to that day, because then it'll force me to look at what potentially could be a blind spot, or it's an opportunity for me to kind of see, hey, how is that link also? Because I haven't even given it much thought.
All right, brother. Good chat. Okay. Sounds like you got a Thanksgiving to get to, huh?
I do. I have to go stop by and pick up some firewood.
Oh.
Yeah, because her sister's place in Mission Viejo, they have a backyard, they have a fire pit there, and I guess I'm responsible for picking up the firewood.
Big task. Don't fuck it up.
Now I'm getting all kinds of requests. Oh, go to the one at the Home Depot because that lasts longer. And don't go to the ones at Ralph. And I'm like, well, seriously, man? All right, fine.
That's funny, Jay.
Keep this in there.
I will. Yeah, it's funny. I don't think it's there anymore, but I used to drive to, when I would drive to school every morning in La Habra, there would be like a big ass container and it would be like filled with free wood. Right. So anytime I have a bonfire with my friends, they're like, oh, go buy some, fireworks from the store. I'm like, nah, I'm gonna go to the free bin real quick.
Hey, that's what we had to do, man, when we didn't have jobs or any kind of money.
Right.
Figure it out. You scrap.
Find a way. Sick, G. All right. Have fun, brother. Happy Thanksgiving.
Cool. Same to you, brother. Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches. You can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.